Yeah, just so excited to get into all this Death Clock talk and the tour and everything. But man, tell me about we'll get into the tour here, but let's talk a little album first, Death Clock 4, and of course the movie that went along with it. Kind of curious, what happens first? Do you write the movie first and then the album, or how does that process work for you?
You know, there's a lot of stuff going on at the same time when we're making the movie. So while I'm developing the movie, I'm also writing demos, lots of demos on guitar. So I'm always kind of going back from the typewriter to the guitar, back and forth. But I know I've got some songs that need to be in the movie and need to be on the record. So those are ones that I'm focusing on first, and the rest of them come after. But it's all happening kind of, and then at the same time, I'm writing a score. So I'm getting right. that prepped for an orchestra to play in Budapest. And I'm working with a whole team at the same time. So there are lots of stuff going on at once, but it's all kind of designed to do one thing, which is kind of tell a story in an entertaining and unique way. So I finish the movie first, then I go in and I finish the record, and that's how it works, really.
Ah, and was that born out of the pandemic, or you probably had been working on it for a while, right, I imagine?
Well, I knew that we started the movie deal during the pandemic, and I was doing a lot of just kind of writing, and I had upgraded my studio at the same time and upgraded all my keyboards and all my plugins and everything. So I was ready to experiment with my new studio. And this all kind of happened at the same time. So I thought, okay, time to get a bunch of demos going. And I think I wrote somewhere around like 30 or 40 kind of demos, you know, just ideas, like pulling a lever at like a a slot machine and seeing if you get three in a row every once in a while, you're just trying to get lucky. So that's kind of what I did. And it was a lot of the work was during the pandemic. And it kind of felt like by the time we were on tour last fall, that it was a really clear kind of feeling that the pandemic was over, that people were coming out of their houses and coming into doing shows and, you know, big festivals and all that stuff. So it was a really exciting time to finish the job with that.
Well, I'm excited for the tour, man. A Mutilation on a Spring Night and coming to our market, going to be in the Inland Empire along with Dragon Force and Necro Goblin at the beautiful, great sounding and beautiful looking Riverside Municipal Auditorium coming up here on April 21st. And hell of a package you put together, man. Necro Goblin and Dragon Force kind of seems like the two perfect opposite ends of Death Clock.
Yeah, we thought goblins, dragons, Death Clock, it all makes sense. Ultimately, when I go to a show, I just want there to be, I mean, I want to have a lot of fun, and I want the audience to have a lot of fun. Sure. So we consider our live show almost like an amusement park ride, like something you'd see at the Universal Studios, like the T2 ride or something like that, where there's a story and there are characters and there's animation. And we've got this band, this group that I'm playing with, and we're playing to picture. So every downbeat is coinciding with a cut. So you get this really great synergy. It's almost like we brought a movie theater into your concert venue and are going to show you a movie as we're playing, but it's just a bunch of crazy videos and stuff. But we really do our best to make sure it's entertaining from the very beginning to the very end. And we thought, who better to join us than incredibly fun bands like Necro Goblicon. I don't know if you've seen their videos. I directed one of them. That's the coincidentally enough, before this, I directed one of their videos, and it was really fun to do that. They have really really great comedy driven videos that are really great. And then Dragon Force is Dragon Force, which is just crazy over the top power metal, just with guitars screaming and shredding and all that stuff. So I love guitar. I love embracing the guitar. Death Clock features the guitar like crazy. Yeah. And so do those other two bands. So to me, it's going to be a night of just crazy, super fun. And I don't know if you're going to have that much fun on another show.
I don't think so, man. I think it's impossible to not walk away with a smile and your mind blown at the same time.
Exactly. Well, that's the idea. It's really, this is like something that I love about heavy metal, is that it can be this much fun and be brutal at the same time.
Yeah. A little tongue in cheek and little bit of both sides. And I'm kind of curious, is this technically a Death Album 4 tour or greatest hits, or how are you viewing the set list?
Yeah, it's a good question. Well, we did a tour last year with Baby Metal, and it was called the Baby Clock Tour. And basically, we tried to give something for everyone. It's people that are here that are just discovering Death Clock right now and want to hear the new record. We have some songs for you. We have stuff from the very beginning. We have classics. We have moments from the movie. We have all kinds of stuff happening at once. So it is, to us, a big celebration of the whole oeuvre of Metalocalypse at the same time. And we want to make sure that everybody's satisfied. So We also, you know, we put this whole crazy tour together, and it's not a regular show, you know, where every time we want to play a new song, we have to make sure we have animation and budget for all that stuff. So while I'm talking to you, I have a team working on new stuff for the new show. So we'll bring some new stuff to the table, play some old stuff. But it's really like, you know, before this, we hadn't gone out on the road for 10 years. So we're trying to show, we're trying to come to your town and show everybody where we're at right now and just entertain you as much as we can.
You know, I was thinking about, speaking of coming to our town, I was thinking about the last time you were in our town. I'm pretty sure I have this right. I don't think you've been out in the Inland Empire since Mayhem Fest 2011, where you stepped up last second for Megadeth. Talk to me about that, getting that phone call and that show.
That was a crazy, crazy last minute swap-a-rooney. Yeah, where we they said Megadeth is not going to be doing it, and are you available? And we said, of course, there's like 30,000 people there. Why would we say no? So it was a crazy long day. I just remember mosh pits and, you know, miniature tornadoes and dust storms and trash burning and all kinds of cool stuff. It was nuts. It was totally nuts. But it was also just really fun to take this crazy project and to put it out in front of people whenever we can. I think it's funny. That was 2011. Since then, you know, we were dormant for a really long time, but something happened where we just kept on fine tuning and making the show better along the way, though, so that now when we play it, I think it's just even better than ever. But yeah, it's been since then that we've been out there. So we're excited to come back, you know, what, 13 years later and bring a whole show and let you guys see us like on Death Clock's terms, you know?
Yeah, it'd be nice to see you in your environment versus during the day when you got the daylight still kind of, I think it was still kind of a little daylight when the time when you were playing.
Yeah, I think, geez, I don't even remember. I know we were on very late, but yeah, I don't even remember if we were on during the day or during the night. I just remember usually I got my hands full on stage. I got a lot of guitars to play. I got a lot of vocals to sing. So I'm usually, when you see me on stage, I'm thinking as hard as I can about the next part, especially if it's a one-off. But this tour is like, it's really fun going on tour again so recently after our last one, because all the licks and all the riffs and all that stuff is still inside my muscles and everything. So it's really fun to kind of just bring it back and be more relaxed and be more enjoying myself on stage.
And I'm curious, man, I've been thinking a lot of recently about motivation, and I kind of feel like there's kind of like two types of motivated people. And I'm kind of curious which one you are. I feel like there's those that are kind of like chip on the shoulder, never felt quite right, never felt like they fit in. So they are kind of, that's kind of driving them. And then there's the others that are kind of just born for greatness. And just tell
them. I
think I certainly fall in the first one. Kind of curious about, for you, what drives you?
I don't know. Look, it's funny because I've been creative for a long time, and that's my job now, to be creative as a writer, as a comedian, as a joke writer, as a character builder, as a world builder, as a musician.
Yeah.
So I'm always trying to think of, it all started with the guitar, though. It all started with my love of the guitar and having my brain want to go all over the place, but the guitar kind of calmed my brain and said, here's a really good puzzle for you. This should keep you quiet for maybe the rest of your life, because you'll never solve it. And so I loved that, but I also was drawn to studying script writing and movies and TV and stuff. So, you know, I'm a guitar player who found himself working at a movie theater while I was going to music school in Boston and everything. And then I wound up on stage doing stand-up. So I was just trying to think, how can I put myself in a position where someone gives me the keys to drive my own vehicle? And what is that vehicle? And I grew up with a group of people who were kind of starting out in the late 90s in comedy, and there weren't that many people out there. So the idea for us was always, what can we do? What can we bring to the table that's new? What can we do that somebody else hasn't done before? And me and my comedian friends and my musician friends, we're always asking those same questions. What can we do that's different? And I thought, well, at some point I'm going to do some kind of a music-driven project But it's probably going to be really complicated. It's going to take all of my every like ounce of my energy, and I'm going to try to do it though. And that would end up being Death Clock and Metalocalypse and everything. Before that, I just did a regular TV animated show called Home Movies that was completely different. You would never know it's the same person doing both shows. But my question is, how can I be creative on terms that I think are important? How can I hone my craft as much as I can along the way and both satisfy the selfishness of an artist and also meet the audience somewhere right in the perfect sweet spot? That's my absolute goal. So however I get there is however I get there. And it's both irritating and annoying being an artist. And it's like, you know, I think somebody told me in an interview, yeah, when you're being a writer, when you've chosen to be a writer for a living, you're choosing to have homework for the rest of your life. That's also very, very true. It's that same feeling like, oh no, I've got a lot of work to do. I'm running out of time. That's part of the feeling. So you embrace all that stuff. And you try to find a way to be healthy and live your life and also wrestle with all these crazy monsters in your mind that are the story, the scripts, the feeling, the energy, the comedy, all that stuff. At the same time, I think people that are creative are always trying to find a way to throw a saddle on their creativity and ride it off into the sunset. And that's so I study my own creativity as much as I'm studying my hero's creativity. At the same time, I'm always reading books on how people whom I admire are creative.
It's amazing, like talking about that creativity and all the different things you do. Like I'm creative in my own right, but I just do radio. You know, it's singular focused. I can't even imagine what you go through with writing, singing.
It's all the same thing as far as I'm concerned. Plus, I mean, there's so many things you're doing inside of being inside of radio. There's so much writing, so much articulation, there's so much communication going on. I'm thinking about all that stuff too. So it's not too different. I think it's all the same thing. I think the more we subdivide kind of genres and ideas and ideologies about creativity, the more we confuse ourselves. As far as I'm concerned, everything's a guitar.
Yeah.
I just need to know where the frets are. I need to know where the amp is. I need to know where the buttons are. Pro Tools is very similar. Like if you're recording music, it's very similar to editing software. It's all timeline based. So if you can do one, you should be able to do the other. If you want to tell stories, there are a million different ways to do it. So I think a guitar is part of storytelling. My voice is acting is part of storytelling. Singing is part of storytelling. Programming drums is part of storytelling. Getting the score right, getting the subtext of the character is just part of storytelling. What it looks like, how it feels when I look at it. If there is no dialogue or no music, how do I feel? All those things are all part of the same thing. It's all a guitar as far as I'm concerned. So the more I think of it as one thing, the easier it is. But every time I turn and focus on something else, I have to make sure I know and respect kind of the limitations and possibilities of each thing from editing, directing, writing, acting, all that stuff. But ultimately, if I'm playing and I'm being creative and I'm not getting stuck, then I'm in a good place.
And are you the type of guy that wakes up at like 3 a.m. and starts writing stuff down? Or do you set aside writing time specifically for something? How does that part of the creative process work for you?
Yeah, that's basically, it's funny that you're asking this because I get so many questions about creativity because I think people see my job and they go, how do I do music and the comedy? How do I do all the fun stuff? But with the fun stuff comes all the kind of miserable constructing of it, the
work,
building the architecture or something. But I do get up in the morning and I write in the morning and I do my miserable writing, my blank page writing in the morning, but not too early. But I realize I'm good for total creative, hardcore blank page writing for about 3, maybe 4 hours. And then I say to my brain, take the rest of the day off. You can edit something else. You can go on a walk, figure out why the stuff that you wrote this morning isn't working. Try to sort out what you think is working, what isn't, why. Go on a walk. Ask yourself these questions. And one by one, the subconscious brain starts answering all of my quandaries.
Yeah.
So, or questions, you know, so that's kind of, and it goes on from day to day like that. And then when I'm working hard, you can't pull me from my desk, from my edit bay, from my, you know, my studio station. And when I'm not working, I am the laziest person you'll ever meet in your life. I am not like constant, like, ooh, I must fulfill and reach fruition in every day. I am really like, I'm about to go on the road. So I'm like, almost like pre-exhausted for that. And I know that like, okay, I've got to make sure I keep healthy. I can't get sick. I want to say hi to people. I want to make this fun. I'm This is the Death Clock tour, and we're bringing our friends. I want to make sure everybody, every band is happy. I want to make sure my crew is happy. I'm thinking of like things that are going to get me exhausted later on and trying to solve them now. So that's what it is. I think it's to be creative is a big, crazy mess. It's both organized and disorganized. And the best thing you can do is prioritize what it is that you're most excited about working on at any given moment.
I like what you said about putting it away for a while. I find that too. Like sometimes if you work on something, you run into a roadblock, don't think about it, and your subconscious will figure it out a little bit later on.
I think David Lynch has a great book on subconscious and unconscious and catching the big fish is what it's called. If you're creative, I'd recommend reading that book because he's talking about leaving the questions. There's like the way your head thinks, which is very linear. And then there was the way the organic brain thinks, almost like in dreams. Mm-hmm. And if you ask the right questions to yourself, you will get the answers.
Interesting.
But the unconscious will let it happen. So when I go on a walk and I've asked myself a few questions and I'm upset that I haven't solved it, I can say, all right, brain, take it easy. Think about anything else. It's almost like when you're in the shower and water's running and you're confused by everything else, or you're walking in a crowd of people and you're kind of focused, your unconscious brain starts dropping off ideas. So it's something that's kind of worked for me, and I now rely on it.
Love it. And curious, man, what's next for you? I mean, is it going to be more music? Or are you kind of taking this, to greater heights, getting back into the Death Clock world, or more animation, more writing? What's kind of next on the horizon for you?
Well, I mean, there's so much stuff I never talk about that I'm always doing. I'm usually in some kind of a development deal at some point, working on some kind of a project, and now is no different. I've got like deadlines and things around this, but usually I can't talk about those projects because they haven't reached some kind of big fruition. So I have that. I have a script I'll be taking on the road with me, and it's for a feature that I want to write and direct for live action. That's definitely where my head's at after finishing this other movie. I love movies more than anything. That's my priority. I'll probably write all the music. I'll probably make it very musically driven, all that stuff. I'm always working in animation. I'm always, narrowing in on live action stuff through music videos, through pitch ideas, through stuff like that. And then I'm always trying to build something that I haven't done before. So that's the idea, is like, what haven't I done? What tricks have I learned along the way? And how can I get it done? How can I make this whole thing work with, in a minimal budget kind of a situation? And that's another big important thing, is how do you make this stuff work with the money you've got? That's a tour. That's a movie. That's a TV show. Always the bottom line is really, really important. And creative people need to always consider that too. How much money you got? How are you going to make it work? How are you going to make something look better with less money? What's the pipeline? How do you pay attention to that and sort it out so it works for you? So things like that. I always think about what would Roger Corman do? Things like that. Old, Hollywood producers that have made hundreds of movies with nothing.
Yeah. The eternal jigsaw puzzle.
Yeah, it really is. But, it's the puzzles are there to be solved.
Yep. Very true. Dude, I appreciate all the time. Last thing I got to hit you with. We're an old school radio station. We do a feature called Mandatory Metallica, which you're going to be a part of. And I've been having this little Metallica debate that I need to get your opinion on.
I have a lot to say about Metallica.
Great. So it's really simple. We're really comes down to a debate. Me and my buddy debating their best, their greatest thrash metal album ever, which kind of comes down to two: Ride the Lightning versus Master of Puppets. If you had to pick one out of those two, which one's your numero uno?
I think Master of Puppets is, I would always say Master of Puppets, because I think it's just got, the music is honed. The music is unique. Everything from The Thing That Should Not Be to Battery, those are all just, there's a darkness, there's evil. There's like, there's old school fire and brimstone gravitas. That's almost like neoclassical. They're like, whether or not they know it, they're using these traditional harmony chords to elevate and accentuate everything. It's just great riff writing. I love Metallica because, especially in those days, and I would also put Injustice for All in that category too, where they are doing this wonderful kind of beautiful, they're creating this, thrash can go get at this tempo where it just drops you off in one place and it zigzags you through this labyrinth of and drops you off in a completely different place, and you don't know what happened, but you went on some epic journey. And that's what I love about Metallica, is they really create the journey. They create the labyrinth. They start you off slow. They lift you off fast. There's a breakdown somewhere along the way, but there's so much musical experimentation that I wish they never, ever stopped and kept getting more intense and heavy. But I also respect that they go where they want to go, and yeah, they tell us, because that's what the artist should be doing. Anyway, so long answer short, I always think Master of Puppets, though, you know, Ride the Lightning. I mean, there's so much. There's Call of Cthulhu, which is one of the most epic songs, I think, in the world, too. So it's hard to compare a great band to itself.
Sure.
But I would also say that there's so much rage and anger and darkness inside of And Justice for All, you know, that it's hard for me to not even mention that one with the other two. So much time has passed. I see that as a real masterpiece, too.
Really? Yeah, because I always kind of looked at that as like the next chapter, And Justice. You know, certainly a change at bass player, certainly a sonic change on that album, and they got a little proggy too on Injustice.
Yeah, and I'm there for all that stuff too. Plus, I mean, they're going through, it's a dark album. They've lost an important family member, and they're wrestling with it. And you can hear that. There's humanity all throughout that. Plus, there's darkness. It's militaristic. It's got so much. Again, it's epic. Metallica is epic when they're really, really epic. They are not screwing around. And then for some reason, they're one of their craziest songs ever. One is the one that broke through, or has like elements of a ballad, but then it turns into this crazy, again, it's a nightmare of a person. It's a story of a person with no arms or limbs who doesn't want to be alive anymore. And that's the song that everyone's like, bring it on. That's the song we want to hear. The one with the person with no limbs, give it to us. And America's like, opens up its arms to Metallica. What a strange, strange story. But that was also, that record's also important because I was discovering heavy metal around that age too.
Yeah,
and that
same
was the record that came out. So that does, it's an important thing when you're thinking of your own favorite record. Some of them are just going to mean a little bit more to you because that was your record. Like King Diamond's Them is my King Diamond record.
Right, right.
Abigail's great, but King Diamond's Them is my King Diamond. So I always like, it may be surprising to some people, but that's where I was when I discovered it was And Justice for All, then Master Puppets, and Ride the Lightning.
Yeah, same with me. I came in Justice, and then, you know, backwards and forwards and everything. So Blackened has that space in my heart.
Dude.
That's my favorite Metallica song. But
it's hard to beat it, yeah.
But album-wise, I'd go Master.
Yeah, yeah. But I don't think there's a dull moment on any of them.
No. You know?
And they really, like, they did their work, and they were working so hard. And I mean, so much thrash was really sculpting out its own voice at that time, from what Anthrax was doing to what Megadeth was doing. Mm-hmm. Like a year later, Rust in Peace comes out, which is also my Megadeth record too, because that was just musically, riff wise, and then you've got Marty Friedman in there. So,
ooh, that's a whole nother debate. Rust versus Countdown.
Exactly. I'm sure I'll lose that, but I mean, like, you know, it's all personal, and that's what's great about music. At some point, it no longer belongs to the band; it belongs to us.
Yeah.
And we get to make the decisions, and we get to like go in the chat rooms and decide our own hierarchy of importance, etc. You know.
So now the tough part, just to put a button on it, what Metallica song can we play for you on Mandatory Metallica? What's your favorite Metallica tune?
Oh, geez. My favorite Metallica tune. I don't think I can answer this question in any kind of rational way.
Doesn't have to be favorite, but just one you want to hear on the radio, or one that would be good to hear on the radio.
Well, let's go with Blackened then. I think I'm with you. That is just that crazy upbeat on that thing is so nutty. I don't know how the hell they play that live. I don't know how James Hetfield comes up with these riffs, but I understand, like, it's so funny. I play an Explorer. I love James Hetfield. There's a reason I play an Explorer, and there's a reason I keep it low these days, is because it's the James Hetfield way. He's figured something out about the right arm and keeping it slung low, because there are guitar players that keep their stuff up high. It also works. It really does. And I do that too on other guitars, but my Explorer needs to be low because the center of gravity needs to be low for your right hand. Just whatever that, and all those downstrokes. It's just a, He's a there are so many great rhythm guitar players in that era, and James Hetfield may reign above them all. I'm not sure if I even have the authority to say that, but
well, it's like you said, it's all about the down picking, right? That's what he mastered. That's his.
Yeah, I mean, I think he really was just constantly asking himself, you know, what can I do that's different? What can I do that's faster? What's Slayer doing? How can we make our own version of stuff? And they were always putting their personality into their music, and that's not easy to do, to find a voice inside of even your own band, you know. But they certainly did. I mean, if you took his actual voice away and you just listened to his decisions on guitar, or how they were derived, you know, between Kirk and Lars and I guess Jason at the time, how did that come together? And it's that great, beautiful decision-making process, and the fact that they just pushed themselves to go harder and more intense, especially on that record.
And turn off the bass. No.
Yeah, and turn off the bass, exactly, which is another big part of what Metalocalypse is that, you know, it's derived from... you know, we joke about this era of metal where you can't hear the bass at all. Now you can listen to the new Meshuggah records. The guitars have more bass than the bass. It's nuts.
Beautiful, man. Thank you so much for the time. It was a privilege to get to speak to you, and I can't wait for the show out RMA in Riverside.
I know. I'm looking forward to it. It's going to be lots and lots of fun.
Yeah, it's a great theater with great sound out there. I think you'll really dig the venue.
Yeah, I'm really excited to play. Yeah, absolutely. Well, thank you for taking an interest, and I really appreciate it.
Absolutely, man. Safe travels. Have a good one.
Right. I'll see you. I'll see you around the way. Okay.
Yes,
bye.
Sir. Bye-bye.
Dude, you absolutely rock. Thank you so much for checking out the entire interview. Now just hit subscribe. Subscribe to the podcast, Radioactive Mike Z. My interviews in their entirety, available on all the major platforms, TuneIn, Stitcher, iTunes, SoundCloud, whatever you're listening to right now, just hit the subscribe button. Make sure to give me a follow on the socials as well. I'll follow you back at MikeZ967. And bro, don't miss the radio show. Now 10 p.m. to midnight on 96.7 KCAL Rocks in the Southern California Inland Empire area, Riverside, San Bernardino County. Always streaming on live at kcalfm.com. You, my friend, absolutely rock. Dude, you absolutely rock. Thank you so much for checking out the entire interview. Now just hit subscribe. Subscribe to the podcast, Radioactive Mike Z. My interviews in their entirety, available on all the major platforms, TuneIn, Stitcher, iTunes, SoundCloud, whatever you're listening to right now, just hit the subscribe button. Make sure to give me a follow on the socials as well. I'll follow you back at MikeZ967. And bro, don't miss the radio show. Now 10 p.m. to midnight on 96.7 KCAL Rocks in the Southern California Inland Empire area, Riverside, San Bernardino County. Always streaming on live at kcalfm.com. You, my friend, absolutely rock.